This is File 17, Cycle 3. This is Jean McMillan. Today's date is December 15th, 2017. I am interviewing Reverend Margaret Lemmel, who is the pastor of the Lakeville Methodist Church, which is the oldest Methodist church in New England.
Continuing Methodist Church. We always have to put that number, that little adjective in.
But first we'll start with the genealogical information. Mm-hmm. What is your name?
Margaret Ann, A-N-N-E, Lemmel, L-A-E-M-M as in Mary, E-L.
And your birth date?
My birth date is December 19th, 1960.
And your birthplace?
Plattsburgh Air Force Base, Plattsburgh, New York.
And it's F-L-A-T? Flat? F-L-A-T Ford? Flat Ford?
Flat, no.
How do you spell it?
Plattsburgh.
Oh, Platt, okay.
Plattsburgh, P-L-A-T.
T-T-S-B-U-R-G, okay.
Yeah, Plattsburgh.
And your parents' names?
William Dunloy Lemmel.
And how do you spell the Dun?
D-U-N-L-O-Y.
All right.
And my mother is Gloria Ann.
With an E?
Maiden name is Johnson, with the H-N, Johnson.
Okay. And you have siblings?
Yes, I do. I have three siblings. First is, they're all younger brothers, William Robert, David Bruce, and Barton J.
And your first career was as an ESL teacher in Japan.
Yes, my first career was teaching.
And why Japan?
I had always been fascinated by the Orient. I had always wanted to go to the Orient. I really wanted to go to China. But China, being a communist country at the time, was very out of reach. They were just starting to open up in the early 80s. And I thought Japan, which I was also very fascinated, would be a good place to go.
Do you speak other languages besides Japan?
I used to speak Spanish very badly. But that's all been pushed out with Japanese.
Sure.
Once I started the Japanese, I now speak it even more badly.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
Oh, totally, totally.
When did you first think about being a minister?
My first experience, it's what we call a call. My first experience was in college. I was trying to figure out a career path to choose. I had started out as a theater major. I had decided that I don't have the absolute maniacal drive.
And you have to have that for theater.
And I was really trying to think of what else to go. I had sort of started to play with teaching because I had gotten several people through various classes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Colleagues through various classes, and I was really thinking of, if I don't go into theater, what should I do? And I was very seriously asking this question of myself when I got this voice outside of me said, you should become a minister. And that was very surprising to me because, of course, in 1980 there were not a lot of women ministers. I had never met a female minister. Mm-hmm. I knew of no female ministers. So it was not a career that ever presented itself as a possibility to me.
But you had an aunt that was...
She became a minister later.
Ah, okay.
After, you know...
Okay.
She became a minister later, so that wasn't her first...
I see.
...thing that she did. She was also a second career person.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt I didn't have experience, and then the voice came back and said, well, go out and get some experience. And then I really thought, well, what's one thing I really love to do? And I really realized that all this getting through my classmates through these other classes, I would sort of become the leader of mm-hmm. study groups, that maybe teaching was mm-hmm. where I was going to go. So junior and senior year, I then concentrated on getting my teaching credentials.
And you went to Japan for 16 years.
Right. Oh, and I should mention, oddly enough, that the school I went to, the University of Denver, is a Methodist seminary.
Oh. So, okay.
Oddly enough, I was surrounded by Methodism without even knowing it. At the time, my I have been brought up in the Presbyterian Church. So,
when did you graduate from University of Denver?
I graduated in 1982, June of 1982.
And what was your major? Teaching?
My major was, I had a double major in theater and philosophy. And then my minor was, and I put minors in quotes because I was one class away from having a triple major, mm-hmm. in education.
Okay.
And then later on, but this was later, I actually completed more credits in the state of Washington, so I guess you could say I had a triple major. And then later, when I returned from Japan, I actually, in order to get my New York certification, I had to round out my English credentials because they felt it was not round enough, so I actually have four majors total. It's very embarrassing.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. You can never waste that.
I know you can't, but...
Okay. And when you came back, you decided to go to seminary, but you didn't go to Drew.
No, and that was completely a choice because Drew is in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. It would have required a commute of about an hour and a half driving every day to the seminary. Either that or I would have had to live there, and I didn't possess really the financial means. My parents were more than happy to have me continue to live at home,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was incredibly generous of them, if you consider the fact that I had a daughter that I was also raising at the time. I went to Union Theological, simply because it was easier to commute.
Oh, yeah. And economically, it made much more sense.
Economically, it made more sense. And let me tell you something, 2 hours a day on a train...
No fun.
It's gold when you have to study.
Okay. Yep. All right.
And so instead of me spending an hour and a half losing 3 hours a day driving, I gained 2 hours a day of studying, if you think about it, every
yes.
time I went.
Yes. Never having commuted anywhere, but I can appreciate that.
No. It's you can do so much reading.
Yeah.
Nobody bothers you.
No, certainly not in New York City.
No. Mm-hmm. No.
When were you actually ordained?
I'm working my way through the ordination process. The Methodists have...
Oh, they have a multi-layer.
They have multi-layers
okay.
of ordination.
All right.
So,
Is that the elder orders business?
That's the elder
okay.
orders
then we'll let,
business.
Okay, then we'll let that go for a bit and
okay.
get back to that one.
Okay.
Could you have... Is this your first church?
No, I... was from 2009 till from July. Now, Methodists go from July to July appointments.
Yep. Yep.
So July 2009 to June 2013, I was down at Cold Spring and South Highland. Now, at the time, they were two separate churches. They are no longer now. They have merged.
And that's in New York.
That's in New York. That's on the... east side of the Hudson River, mm-hmm. right across from West Point.
Yep, I know it well. Mm-hmm. Only because we used to commute to Staten Island, and that was the way we'd go.
Right. And they were, each of them were a 1/8 time appointment. So, essentially, that means that you work, a 1/8 time appointment means literally... 1/8 of 40 hours.
Okay, so you're working 10 hours.
You're working 10 hours a week. So basically what you are is a supply preacher, but I also, as somebody said, you do more than that because, of course, I would go to meetings. I would also run work Sunday school, Bible study
mm-hmm.
workshop one
mm-hmm.
Sunday a month. But at the same time, I was still working as an ESL teacher, because that's what I was qualified for, at a place called English First International. which is located in Tarrytown, New York, in the old Marymount College. Marymount sold the building to the company. It's a Swedish company, international language company.
Now, in some of the denominations that I've interviewed, you are put under a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Were you put under a mentor with these two churches?
Yes.
There was a ordained minister?
No, I was running it. Because
you're
I'm a licensed local pastor.
Okay.
I'm what's called the licensed local pastor.
But you were not technically ordained,
could
run a church.
I'm not ordained as an elder.
Okay.
But as a licensed local pastor, you're allowed to, you are the pastor of a church, you are sent to a church, and you are allowed to perform all the services of a minister in that church. The thing that you cannot do is, for instance, I can provide sacrament, which in the Methodist tradition is communion and baptism, at the church, but I cannot provide it for other churches. I couldn't walk into, for instance, the church in Croton-on-Hudson, which is my home church,
uh-huh.
and do a sacrament there without the minister being present.
But you could preach.
Oh, I could preach, yes.
Okay, and you could do the Bible studies.
I could do the Bible studies.
You could do everything except the sacraments, and the only two...
Outside of my thing. And okay. It also has to do with voting rights within the church. Local pastors can vote on local issues, but we cannot vote on international issues. And we also can't vote on some things pertaining to even our what's called the Methodist Conference. I belong to the New York Conference.
Mm.
So very often we can vote on district issues, but we cannot vote on some things in the conference issues.
When I was doing the Methodist Church history, I had quite a long discussion with people in the New York Conference because they did not want us to have the original saddlebags of the circuit rider, and I was very determined that we were going to have them because we had given them to them originally.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. It took a year and a half to get them just to be there while we were...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. This isn't the appropriate occasion. And I said, it's 225 years history. What do you mean it's not appropriate? What are you waiting for, you know? And they did, but they had to, for security reasons, they had someone actually come up with the saddlebags, mm-hmm. sit in the audience, mm-hmm. make sure nobody walked off with them, and then took them back. Mm-hmm. But it worked out, but it was quite an interesting experience. Now, when you came here, you would have been here in July of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And you have in your head, I know, you've got a goal for this church. What do you want this church to become?
Well, I'd like to revitalize the churches, but there are various ways of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, one, and I know that you might think that merging a church isn't revitalization, but when you go through the merger process, you really have to ask yourself, where do we want to go with our church? What's the point of merging or not merging? If we merge, what will happen? If we don't merge, what will happen? So my whole goal right now is to get us to start really asking, where do we want to be in 10, 15 years? And what's the most effective way of being Methodists in our area?
Do you have a Sunday school here?
We don't right now. Our Sunday school has been combined with the Sharon Sunday School.
Okay.
And they are active here. Right now they just go down to Sharon because that's where the majority of the children are. But, for instance, they've come up for the Hanging of the Greens.
Mm-hmm.
They've come up for the Shoebox Ministry.
Yes.
The Samaritan Purse's Shoebox Ministry.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of the kids in Sunday school come to our Vacation Bible School.
Yep.
Which we also have with the Sharon Church. That's a joint effort with the Sharon Church.
And St. John's comes too, don't they?
St. John's comes too, yes.
How about a youth group? Teenagers?
No, we have none right now.
We
have children that come from the city, but they don't live here.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it's hard.
Right now we're trying to see if we can create at least an alternative Sunday school for them when they are here. So,
will you be responsible for the sunrise service at the Grove this year?
This year, no. I was responsible last year.
Okay.
What I do with Sharon is, because I do have these two churches, in order to stay fair and balanced, the year that I'm here for sunrise service, I am in Sharon for Memorial Day.
Ah.
And the year that I am in Sharon for sunrise service, I am here for Memorial Day. So,
what is your time? Is it one quarter Lakeville, three quarters
Sharon? It's one quarter Lakeville, one half Sharon. So I'm a three-quarter time minister. But there's advantages to that. Because
what do you do with the other quarter? Is it all for you?
Not really.
No, because it would bleed over into whatever. Yeah.
And I will say that's more of a pay thing. What I really try to do is I really look at what needs to be concentrated where. It's kind of like it was difficult for me. I think that that's one of the most difficult things about having these odd separations.
Yeah.
When I worked at the other church, at least they were both one eighth time.
Yeah.
So they were even, you know.
Yeah, and this isn't.
This isn't. And so what I did is I thought, you know, I'm just not going to think about the one quarter time and the one half time. It's going to be like having two kids. And when you're a mother, sometimes you have to focus more
attention on one kid
and more attention on the other kid.
Yeah,
it's just how it
works. But it does even out.
It evens out.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
That's how I kind of look at it. I'm trying not to get too hung up on the quarter time, half time issue.
Yeah, that would be a real problem.
It is. I really tried the first year to do that, and I drove myself crazy. Because you can't.
No.
There are times when Sharon needs more attention than Lakeville. There are times when Lakeville needs more attention than Sharon. So I just thought I'm just going to throw that out the window and give them time. What I do try to do desperately is make sure I have a day off. I have my day off.
When?
Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesdays.
Yes.
Because
my husband has his day off on Wednesdays. Although he's trying to get that changed because he wants to have 2 days off in a row.
Even though his
boss doesn't really want that, but he just feels it's inefficient for him to not have 2 days off in a row.
Yeah, I've worked that way. I know exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah.
All right.
So I might change it off to Monday. If he gets the day off on Monday, but where it's all suspended right now.
Some do Mondays. Some do Fridays. Mm-hmm. You're the first Wednesday I've got. Good.
But the reason why it's Wednesday is
because you want to be with your husband.
Yeah, I want to be with my husband. So.
What are some of the outreach programs? We still do the Christmas breakfast.
We do the Christmas breakfast.
And you do a Halloween party.
We do the Halloween party.
And you do the summer Bible school.
And we do the Bible school, yes.
And that's usually in August?
That's always in August. And we always try to schedule it the week after the school specials are done. Because then, first of all, the kids that are going to the school specials, they can come to the Vacation Bible School. Mm-hmm. And it just gives us a
better handle on it.
Well, a better handle on it. We're not competing with the school, and the parents appreciate that there's one more thing they can send their children to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Even if it is only 2 days.
The teachers are so happy when it gets to be the end of school, and the parents are so dismayed.
Now you
believe me, when we start counting down, about 100.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about the elder orders. This is the level of ordination that you're going through.
The level of ordination, you start out as an exploring candidate, and then this is just you talking with a mentor. It's like, well, okay, you want to be a minister, this is what it's going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to write a paper. You have to be recommended by a home church. You have to write a paper And then you're what's called commissioned. And commission means a number of things. It means that, yes, you've been accepted by not only your home church, but the committee above, the district committee, has said, yes, we think you would be a good person to enter ministry. You go into commissioned, and then you spend more time working, and then you become you go through a few years, you write a paper, you go through another committee. You often, at this point, you're either in seminary or you're working with a church, depending on where you are in your process. And then you become a local pastor. As a local pastor, you can be commissioned as a local pastor, and then you go through another or examination process, and you become what's called a provisional pastor. And it's kind of like it's kind of like the best thing I can describe is like an associate professor mm-hmm. in a college,
yep.
where you've been accepted, you're given a desk, you're given a job, and then you're supposed to have this period of time where you work at a church and really decide if this is what you want to do, and then you you take elders' orders and you become you take the elders' exam and then you become an elder.
Is the exam oral?
There's a written component to it. There's a ministry project component to it. And there's a bunch of other things. We have to, of course, during this whole thing, I've had to take racial training, the sexual boundaries training. Then you go through a few other things. And they make sure you have all your ducks in order, and then you go through the oral exam.
And then you're actually ordained?
Then you are ordained at conference. You are ordained at annual conference. So you pass, and then you're ordained at annual conference.
In this church, how do you do communion?
We do communion with intinction. So it's in this church we have two chalices on either side of the communion table. I serve the bread, and then
you don't use wafers. You use bread.
I use bread. My husband actually makes the bread.
Good for him.
This has been his since he's a professional chef. When he first came here, he said I would really like to make the communion bread, and so we experimented with some mm-hmm. different breads and. We got a recipe. He figured out a recipe that works. Easy tear. It's easy for me to tear.
Yep.
And
yep.
it holds together so it yep. doesn't fall apart when it gets into yep. the grape juice.
Yep.
It took us a few rounds.
Yeah, well, you know, it has special requirements.
Yes.
It does. And how about baptism?
Baptism, I have done one here.
But is it a cross on the forehead?
Oh, yes, it's a cross on the forehead.
My mother used to say, I was baptized when I was six, and I was baptized in the Episcopal Methodist Church.
Uh-huh.
And as the minister was putting the water on my forehead, my mother leaned down and she said, "Don't you dare wipe it off."
So the idea is, you know, to baptize.
Yeah. And I was older, I mean, I wasn't a baby.
Right.
But with the American Orthodox, it's adult total immersion three times.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm asking. To get the variety mm-hmm. of the different denominations mm-hmm. so that when somebody, if they chose to compare, mm-hmm. then you get some of the differentiations.
But there are some, not so much in New England, I think, but there are, I have heard of Methodist churches in the South that do
oh, yeah.
for adults,
yeah.
they do immersion.
Yeah.
I mean,
the Baptist
we
church
do sprinkling, does. We do the cross on the forehead, uh-huh. we do immersion. It depends really on the tradition of the area
mm-hmm.
and the church itself.
Self, yeah.
I think in New England, immersion is very impractical.
It's very cold.
Is it very cold?
I went to a college that was on a lake, and it happened that it was a Baptist college, and they believed in immersion. Mm-hmm. And boy, you wanted to make real sure that it was July or August because, that lake was cold.
That's
ooh,
right.
Ooh, ooh. Yeah. But the different denominations have different ways of doing things. When I was in the Anglican Church in England, it was real wine, which I wasn't used to, and the wafers.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, different from what the Congregational Church would do or
That's
the Methodist
right.
Church.
We have now, there's a movement in the Methodist Church to provide real wine for communion. I have mixed feelings about it. I think that one of the things about the Methodist Church is that because it took a stand very early on against alcohol.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that alcohol poisoning used to be a huge problem in this country. A huge problem. There was no regulation. Mm-hmm. And somebody once said to me, well, prohibition was ridiculous. And I said, no, prohibition came out with a necessity because people... People were dying. I mean, you don't understand that. There was actually a community force in New York City. This was an actual force to go around and collect the dead bodies on New York City streets who had died of alcohol poisoning the night before, bring them to a special morgue, and have people actually... That's where you went if you wanted to identify someone who was dying of alcohol poisoning. It was something that happened because nobody knew what was in alcohol or liquor. And
it wasn't regulated.
There was no regulation.
It was bathtub gin or a still out in the back.
You didn't know what you were drinking.
Yeah.
People could go blind.
Oh, sure.
You know, that's how bad it was.
Oh, yeah.
You know. So I think that the Methodist Church took that stand that at least there would be no alcohol on their property. I mean, a Methodist minister used to actually, if he was found drinking...
Was dismissed. Oh, yeah.
Now we're a little more
liberal about it.
But we're told that, I mean, even in our Book of Discipline, it says you will drink responsibly. And the point is that, you know, addiction is a very horrible thing. It's a terrible thing. I think that a lot of Methodist ministers, our addictions are probably not alcohol or pills or whatever, but it's food. It's food. Our vices are probably food. We were actually rated as one of the most unhealthy, believe it or not. We went from being one of the most healthiest demographic groups in the 50s and 60s to being one of the most unhealthiest.
Oh, my.
And so now we're correcting it.
Yeah. On an individual basis.
No, on a full conference wellness program. And we have actually gotten so much healthier as a group that our insurance rates have gone down as a reward.
You were at one time from the pulpit explaining about you were doing a weight loss program.
Yes, I was.
Was that related
it
to this?
It was related to that.
Okay.
It was related
to that. You see, I do pay attention.
Yes, you do.
Okay. Now, when we talked before about future plans for the Lakeville Methodist Church, you talked about merging, but you used the term parish model. Would you explain what that is,
please? Well, when you have... A parish, the idea, it comes from the old idea out of England of what is the territory of that church. And the idea being that in the old days, if you lived within the parish boundary, you didn't go hop, skip, and jumping over to the next parish to church. That was very, very frowned upon.
Oh, yes.
But it's the idea of what is your territory of the church. So, a parish model, for instance, is if, and I really have to keep emphasizing the if.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know.
If Lakeville and Sharon merge, we have to decide what is our parish going to be? What is our umbrella that is going to be? What is our territory that we will be ministering to? Sharon has a little more idea of the I think Lakefield does too, don't get me wrong, because we've had people from Canaan and other places, and some of our congregants do live in Sharon, and Millerton as well. But the idea, Sharon has a lot of people, for instance, from Armenia.
Yes. Oh, yes.
A lot.
Yes.
Because we're on the border.
Yeah.
So we even have people from down in Dover Plains area.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that, and we've had some people come in from Millerton on occasions.
Yeah.
So, you know, what does that mean? I have some parishioners that are now located up in Canaan at Gear. So I have to go visit them. You know,
sure.
I go visit them.
Yeah.
I try. It's a little bit of a haul, but I try. And the point being is, what is our parish model? What we have to not think in terms of we're the Lakeville Church, but that we are the Northwest Corner. What do we call ourselves? Do we call ourselves the Northwest Corner Church? How do we envision that? Whereas I'm not, you know, whereas do we keep, there's nothing wrong with being the Lakefield Church. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. But we have to decide what is going to be our parish.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's what I mean by the parish model.
All right.
It's a different viewpoint.
Yes, it is. It's very different.
And when you do that, you have to say, is there a... Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Yes. Can I help you?
Excuse me, yes.
You
You were telling me about the parish model. Do you have other future plans for the Methodist Church?
Or
is that, that's the big one, isn't it?
I think that's the big one. And it's, I think when you start talking about that, a lot of things are going to come up out of things,
sure.
out of it.
Because you're going to have the two parish councils
right.
discuss and,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there anything that you'd like to add to this interview about the Methodist Church that you'd like to add before we close?
Well, I think that if there's any church as a whole, that the larger church mentality as a whole that can weather the changing zeitgeist or gestalt or whatever, or paradigm, whatever you want to call it, of what's happening to religion in America, it is the Methodist Church. Because we are a church that was born out of practicality and necessity. And I think we're not rooted, even though we have our idea of what is our tradition, our quadrille, part of our four-sided belief system is there's experience.
Mm-hmm.
Of life experience. So what do we need to do now to be relevant now in the world?
It's a very practical.
It's a very, very practical church. So, and I have great hopes with our new bishop because he is a very practical person.
Good.
And yet, I think what we really do is need to do, and I'm in agreement on him, is that we need to really think about the fact that our mission is a holy one.
Mm-hmm.
It is a sacred one. We're supposed to be connecting people to God.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we do that in this community? How do we help people in this community? What are the practical steps we can do in this community for that? So that's kind of...
That's it.
That's it.
Wonderful.
That's what I'm going for.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.